We will be reading scripture from starting with Genesis 12, 1 through 9. Now the Lord said to Abram, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and the ones who curse you, I will curse. And in all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So Abraham went, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Abram took his wife Sarai, and his brother's son Lot, and all the possessions they had gathered, and the persons whom they had acquired in Haran. And they set forth to go to the land of Canaan. When they had come to the land of Canaan, Abram passed through the land to the place at Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring I will give this land." So he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. From there, he moved on to the hill country on the east of Bethel, where he pitched his tent, with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord and invoked the name of the Lord. And Abram journeyed on by stages to Negeb.
Now Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. He journeyed on by stages from the Negev and as far as Bethel, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, to the place where he had made an altar at first. And there Abram called the name of the Lord. Now Lot, who went with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents, so that land could not support the both of them living together, for their possessions were so great that they could not live together. And there was strife between the herders of Abram's livestock and the herders of Lot's livestock. At the time, the Canaanites and the Perizzites lived in the land, and Abram said to Lot, "Let there be no strife between you and me. Let between your herders and my herders, for we are kindred. This is not the whole land before you. Separate yourself from me. If you take the left land, I will go right. If you take the right land, I will go left." Lot looked about him and saw the plain of the Jordan was well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt in the direction of Soar. This was before the Lord had destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself all the plain of the Jordan, and Lot journeyed on eastward. Thus they separated from each other.
Well, thank you all for what's already been in this service. This has been deeply affirming and life-giving. I expected this to be an important day and to feel like an important day. It really doesn't hit you until you're up here and experiencing it. How important and how warm and how good it is to be installed fully with you today. I'm also very aware of my clothing choice all of a sudden, but okay. Rich, is the PowerPoint fired up there? There we go. If God is calling, what happens next? February 2018, I'm at work, Canadian Mennonite University, this is not winter yet, helping other staff and faculty greet pastors who are arriving at our annual pastors' conference. I'm smiling and shaking hands warmly, but I'm worn out from leading my congregation's complicated pastoral review process. The politics of it remind me of the politics I've watched my own father contend with as a pastor. I leave the conference room, and I find myself surprised by how bright the sunshine is and how light my feet feel. The last thing I expect to think enters my mind. I want to be one of those pastors in that room. If God is calling, what happens next? April 2018. We're at home. Jill messages. For I think the third time in the last year and a half, she wants to know if I want to be her pastor. Shanda plays hard to get. She tells Jill we'll only consider it if Jill promises to sing happy birthday to her every day. Jill promises. Ben makes a down payment by sending us a video of himself singing happy birthday to Shanda while lunging repeatedly with his shorts pulled up to his belly button. that's just the message dots of you writing. Yeah, that's all I got. We should watch that video sometime, but maybe not in the sanctuary. I admit to Jill that the timing seems interesting. I've just started to feel like maybe I should become a pastor. If God is calling, what happens next? July 2018, Shanda's on the bus. Discerning whether we are called to uproot our young family from their comfortable home and close proximity to doting grandparents. Her train of thought is interrupted by the bus's announcement of the next stop, Deer Lodge Place. Deer Lodge Place, where the bus is about to stop, is the street on which our dream home sits. It's not lavish, but it has everything we've been looking for. And it sits right on Winnipeg's greatest feature, the sprawling, beautiful Assiniboine Park. Recently, we bid aggressively on that home. Really aggressively. We didn't get it. Prompted by the bus's announcement, Shanda loses herself in thought about what could have been. The bus announces the next stop. A stop name Shanda's never paid much attention to before. Next stop, Albany. If God is calling, what happens next? Abraham, still called Abram, enters our story. When he was a kid, his family planned to move to Canaan, but they stopped in Haran, and things must have been good there, because they make their home there. The text tells us that Abram's father will die there 250 years later. The text refers to this as Abram's home by now. My footnotes refer to it as his ancestral home. God says to Abraham, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you." God is calling. But what happens next? So, as we pick up where we left off in our story, we're standing with Abraham on the precipice of a call. Not just any call, but a call from God. And as before, we're asking what is happening in this story that is part of God's overall story. And we're asking what might happen for us as a people who choose to live in this story. So, today, we're going to look at what happens when God calls Abram, and then we're going to see what that might have to say about our calling as a church. As a new pastor and an established congregation opening a new chapter together. And waiting in the wings for today's closer, I have a story from one of you that inspires me that I hope will inspire all of us together as we begin to think about God's call and what happens next. Let's dive in. We're talking about God calling today, not just because it's my installation, and not just because this happens to be a call story here in Genesis 12, but because most see Abraham's story as the call story, or at the very least, as the first call story. The stories we've already talked about, and the ones we're passing by today, Genesis 1 to 11, are stories of creation and recreation of the entire world. In those 11 chapters, we have the 7 days of creation, Adam and Eve, Noah and the flood, and the Tower of Babel. Each of these stories are about the creation and recreation, the starts and stops and sputters of the beginning of everything. These stories establish certain universal truths, especially the ones we've covered. Like as we saw in Genesis 1, that in a world filled with stories that tell us it's all about violence and competition and being the strongest, God's story survives to tell us that it's really about love, harmony, peace, generosity, and compassion. And like we've seen in Genesis 3, that we aren't perfect, but that, nonetheless, God has come with us into the muck of life after selfish decisions, and that with God, even our bad decisions can become opportunities for us to be in more life-giving relationship with God and one another. But so far in this story, our relationship with God can seem somewhat one-dimensional. It could seem like God establishes what is right and wrong, so humans should do what is right and wrong. Well, sorry, what is right and not do what is wrong. Adam and Eve shouldn't eat from that tree. Noah is remembered because he does what's right, while everyone else does what's wrong. They never should have built that Tower of Babel. It was bad, and so on. With Abram, however, we see something else about our relationship with God in the story. A call to take a leap of faith. And leaps of faith are anything but simple. They are full of creativity, imagination, and risk, even adventure. Think about it. If the only thing that made up our relationship with God was doing what was good and not doing what was bad, we would be a cautious, nervous, careful, legalistic people. But instead, after joining us in the muck of life, after bad decisions, God doesn't just ask us to shape up and behave ourselves. God says, I'm doing something in this world. Jump in. Get involved. Do something that doesn't make sense to you. Do something dangerous and exciting and life-giving. And so with Abraham, we see that life with God in a broken world is not just about trying not to mess up. It's about jumping into the mess with God. God says to Abram, leave everything and go. I have the most amazing things you could ever imagine planned for you. So when we talk about call, and when we're on the verge of something new, like us being church together, good old Abram can be what we turn back to in our story to find wisdom about new callings and leaps of faith. Abram can be what we turn back to in our story when we find ourselves saying both excitedly and nervously, okay, we've been called. Now what? First, of course, we decide if we're going to say yes or no to that call. In terms of me being your pastor, we could check that box off. Done. I'm 100% installed now. So let's look at what happens after that. I want to highlight three things. First, we see that stepping out in faith leads to the establishment of a family or a special group. Abraham and Sarah go on to become the parents of the children that eventually spawn the people of God, God's special group. There's an incredible intimacy to this. God's plan takes root with a particular family, and then God's plan continues to unfold with that family. When God calls, what happens? We find our home in a specific community. Second, we see in the story of Abram that stepping out in faith does not lead to an easy, perfect life. Abram has to leave his family and home together, and God does promise him a lot in return, but one thing God does not promise is calm waters for smooth sailing. So within this family, there is still stress and tension and conflict. Abram and Sarah promptly find themselves in a famine. Then, to deal with the famine, they go to Egypt, where they feel so scared and disoriented that they, or at least Abram, concocts a desperate plan that would strain even the best marriages. If you don't know the story, go check it out. It's very interesting. Then Abram and Lot have to make a land deal to avoid inevitable conflict, a deal that seems to leave Lot with all the good land. Then God's promise of children takes so long that Abram sleeps with their slave, producing exactly the kinds of conflicts you'd expect there too. So when God calls, what happens? Maybe for this one, it's better to say what doesn't happen. Even when it's God calling, we don't get a free pass from the hardships of living in a sometimes hard and broken world. Third, in the story of Abram, we see that although God calls us in to be in particular communities, our loyalty to those communities should eventually produce blessings for all other communities. This is the opposite of our usual assumptions about what make up specific communities. We tend to have a zero-sum view of the world, especially lately, it seems, where if my community or country wants to do well, it needs to outmuscle yours. But God doesn't see it that way. After God tells Abram about the particular people that Abram will father, God tells Abram that in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. As much as Abram's descendants will struggle to fulfill this and will end up in flat-out war with their neighbors, the idea does not die. It pokes its head up throughout the First Testament, and then it really roars to life when Jesus shows up to heal and bless and welcome all kinds of people that Abraham's descendants had come to see as sinners and outsiders and anything but blessing worthy. So, when God calls, what happens? You get an opportunity to be a loving and faithful community that also serves and blesses and welcomes all. So, as we, me and you and all of us in this AMC family, stand together on the other side of a yes to what we've discerned to be God's call, what should happen? Here I have four propositions that I'd like to test with you and that I hope we'll continue to talk about in the months to come. First, let's bond. Let's commit to spending this first year to getting to know and love one another more. This will happen in the foyer and in meetings and over meals and in our homes. But I also want to try to be intentional about this. And one of the ways I hope to be intentional is by finding ways for us to share our stories with one another in worship, Sunday school, one another's homes, and beyond. Second, let's center. Let's spend this year listening for God and making our home under God's wings. Let's pray and listen and share what we're hearing with one another. And let's learn to better know and love this story that we share, God's story. And as we go, let's see if we can also work at common understandings for how we interact with this story. Third, let's extend. Let's spend this year taking stock of where God might be calling us to be a blessing to those beyond this immediate family. In our neighborhood, in our city, in our state, in our country, in the world. Now, all that said, I also sense that many of us sometimes feel like we're still on different pages about what we should do or how and how fast we should do them. So let's work at that. These differences are a gift. But they can also be hard, which leads to my last thought. Fourth, let's be real. I think we should expect this bonding and centering and extending to be invigorating and life-giving, but also to sometimes be complicated and messy. So let's plan to expect a little messiness so that when it comes, we can make it a beautifully sticky mess, one that holds us together. Now, with all that in mind, I want to close with a story from within this family. It's a story like Abraham's. It's a story of call. It's a story about what happens after a call. It's a story of stepping out in faith and bonding and centering and extending and dealing with what's real. It's Marge Shantz's story, and I'd like to call her up now to bless us with it. Now, when Marge is done, I'd like us to, like last Sunday, leave a few moments of silence, just moments in which all of us reflect on how we, the AMC family, might continue to bond, center, extend, and be real. Let Abraham and Marge's stories inspire you. Let God's hopes and dreams for AMC bounce around in your soul. Maybe God has a seed to plant that won't become entirely clear to you for some time. Maybe God has planted a seed and the words are finally coming. Let's start to think about those as we listen to Marge and as we listen to our souls and to God.
Well, our story begins in Nebraska in 1959. We were privileged to become the parents of a beautiful baby girl that we named Nancy. As time went on, we realized that she had multiple handicaps. She had seizures, and she was bipolar. At age 5, there was no school for her special needs in Nebraska. We searched and found a special school in Eugene, Oregon. Like Abram, where God called him to go to the land of Canaan, we felt we should go to Oregon. The decision was hard. We left our home, our jobs, our extended family, our church, our school where our son attended. But we felt God called us to this move. We borrowed a truck and filled it with our stuff and headed to Oregon with the truck and our car. We went from a rural town of about 1,000 people to the city of Eugene, Oregon, which is a university city. When Nancy was 12, there was another big bump in our journey. Due to her disability, she was admitted to the Fairview State Training Center in Salem, Oregon. We wanted to be closer to her, so again we were uprooted and moved to Albany. Nancy lived at Fairview Training Center in Salem for 14 years. In 1988, Fairview Training Center was planning to downsize and finally close because of a mandate from the federal government. They were sending residents out to the community to 5-bed homes. As parents, we wanted Nancy to be in a Christian environment as much as was possible. My husband and I were instrumental in getting a group of us parents and professionals together, and we began discussing ways we might care under the auspices of the Mennonite Church. There was dreaming and brainstorming and fact-finding and decision-making. The outcome was the incorporation of what is now Oregon Mennonite Residential Services, OMRS for short. My husband was very much involved for many years. Often he would say, "I'm not doing this for Nancy. I'm doing it for all the kids." Today we have 14 homes, and the last I heard it might be 18 and 53 residents. OMRS has been a blessing to our family. There has been ups and downs, of course, but the Lord has been with us, and for that, I am grateful. OMRS has been a part of Albany Mennonite for many years. A number of people have contributed in many ways. We often wondered why we had this child with severe developmental disabilities. Maybe, just maybe it was because there might not be an OMRS that has grown from one home to 14 homes or more, and has impacted so many residents and staff. We, along with others, responded to the need with love and compassion for the ones less fortunate than ourselves.